Hi, this is Patti LuPone.
This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Ballmer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Nia Vardalos.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
This is Beanie Feldstein.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine.
A-OK.
Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Alana Levine.
Hey, I heard you needed inspiration. He's Alana and friends with some revelations. Little known fact of the day. Every little thing's gonna be A-OK.
Little known fact about my guest today, during the pandemic, she and her wife and kids got into an RV, which they had never done before, and drove cross country. And that journey turned into a book called Drive by star of Come From Away on Broadway, Sharon Wheatley, who is my guest today on the podcast. Welcome, Sharon Wheatley.
A-OK.
Everyone, my guest today is Sharon Wheatley. Sharon is one of the stars of the Broadway show Come From Away, which can also be seen on Apple TV. And her previous Broadway shows include Avenue Q, Cats, Les Mis, and Phantom of the Opera. But also, Sharon is an extraordinary writer. And her most recent book, Drive, is available everywhere you go and get your books. She also wrote a previous memoir called Till the Fat Girl Sings. And I am so thrilled to welcome Sharon to the podcast today. And my puppy is so thrilled that you are here, that she is barking to come in. So we're going to let her in because I know you're an animal lover.
I am.
Lola, come in and join the podcast.
Come on, Lola.
Oh, she's just...
Now she's shy. She's no, like, no. Maybe
she's camera shy. She's in the room. Come here, sweetie, up on the couch. Go ahead. Okay, now I can focus just on you and Ernest. I have my baby Lola here.
Feels right to start with an animal. It just feels exactly right. Yeah.
I know. I went to your website and one of your bios, it said something like you and your wife are such animal lovers that they basically get the couch and you're sitting on the floor. That's it's my understanding of what it is.
Yeah.
The idea that during this pandemic, you wrote another book, and that it's out in the world, not just that you wrote it, but that it's published and people can have it in their hands is such an incredible thing. But I want to go back for a minute because Come From Away was a show that, entered your life so long ago.
Right.
And then there was this huge pause and now you're back in it. So before we get to the book, everyone go buy the book Drive. Like we're going to get to it, but also just in case we run out of time, go to your local bookshop if you can, or order it online if you can't, but just, she's an incredible writer. That's all I need to say. And she can tell us more about it, but Come From Away, one of my favorite shows on the planet. I want to know how you, Sharon Wheatley, ended up being a part of this incredible cast.
Well, I'll tell you, it is, it's an interesting story. I think, I mean, I'll give you the real version, not the like glamorized version, which is this. Here's the truth, is that probably if I had not quit the business and moved to San Diego, I would not be in the original company of Come From Away. And here's why. Because when I was here, I always joked around and said, you know, I'm like D-list. I'm like the person that they call to come in to replace the third replacement or whatever. I mean, just being honest, I started a lot of my career with, you know, what people used to call park and bark shows, like those British imports. And I was a swing in Les Mis was my first job out of the gate. And I was 25. I didn't even know what a swing was. And then I found out what it was and it was too late to quit. And then it was so hard. It was so incredibly hard. And I remember arriving and thinking they really should have given me an IQ test. Like, I don't know that I can actually fulfill what is needed in this job. So shout out to swings everywhere, not really including myself, even though I was one for a long time. And And then I did the same thing. It's true. And then I did the same thing for Phantom. So I did like all the companies of Les Mis and then all the companies of Phantom. And then in a random act of luck and tenacity, I managed to book Cats on Broadway. And again, it was a little of like one of these things doesn't fit with the other, meaning like I wasn't a dancer, but I could fake it with a lot of humor. And that happened to be exactly what they were looking for. And so I got to do that. So then I had this sort of career crisis where I had done these three big Cameron McIntosh shows and I got dismissed a lot. It was like, oh, she's only a singer, even though I'd been in Cats, or, you know, she doesn't really act. And I just thought it takes a lot of acting skill to pretend like you're a dancer. I just thought there's loopholes here. And then with Avenue Q, I really doubled down because I thought this is a show that I can do. And I taught myself how to puppeteer. So I was lucky to get to do that. But then still, I just wasn't going in for the kinds of roles that I wanted to be going in for. And I knew it was a tough fit for me. I'm like overweight, but attractive. So I wasn't, and not really like a bit actor, if that makes any sense. I don't do that like punchline joke really well. I'm too earnest and honest and soft-hearted to really land a good joke like that. So everything was a problem. And so honestly, I quit the business and pursued writing. And I was in San Diego and Rachel Hoffman, shout out to Bernie Telsey Casting, sent me a Facebook message and said, what are you doing in San Diego? And at the time, I really didn't know exactly what I was doing in San Diego besides hiking Torrey Pines and enjoying the glorious weather. And I kind of wrote that back to her. I said, I haven't auditioned for anything in 3 years. And she said, we're looking for a local hire for the La Jolla Playhouse for this new show that's coming in called Come From Away. And I think you might be right for it. Do you want to read the script? And me being me, which is, you know, self-deprecating most of the time, I wrote back and said, yeah, sure. I mean, I have not really sung anything in 3 years. I don't even know what I would be like in an audition at this point. And she was like, I'm not worried about it. So she sent it to me and I was immediately hooked. And I was hired to do only the La Jolla Playhouse section of Come From Away, even though many of the rest of the company was moving on to do Seattle. It was like a co-production of La Jolla and Seattle. This is like, I don't always talk about this part of it, but I was devastated when I found out that I wasn't going to be moving on to Seattle. And then luck just sort of fell my way. They couldn't find somebody for the Seattle company who lived in Seattle. So they asked me to stay on to go to Seattle. And I was thrilled because at that point I had a sense, we were still in rehearsals for La Jolla, but you could just feel it in the air. It was like electric. And I thought this show is too special. And I was scared of creating a whole role, a whole character that then would be handed off to somebody else. And cut to 7 years later, I'm still here. So that's the long essay answer of how I am in Come From Away.
So in sort of refreshing my memory about sort of the origin story of the piece itself, the creators are Canadian.
Right.
This production first began sort of by being put up on college students somewhere.
It's Sheridan College in Canada. Yeah.
Okay. And so are the creators of the show a married couple?
Yes. Okay. David and Irene.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yep. So they're a couple. They're not just besties, like the six creators. They're actually a married couple.
Yeah.
They made this show and they sort of started building it on Sheridan College students.
Yeah.
And it had a little bit of a life in Canada before it came to Chris Ashley at the La Jolla Playhouse, or was Chris always with it from like early workshop periods of this show?
Well, I think what it was they were given a government grant by the Canadian government to create this show for Sheridan College. So they wrote the show thinking it was going to be for college students. And it kind of grew from there. Now, Chris Ashley was not involved in the Sheridan College production, but I think then it went maybe to like NAMT.
Okay.
And Goodspeed, there was like a NAMT and a Goodspeed section that happened there. So the only thing that happened in Canada was Sheridan College. Then it came here, did a Goodspeed thing, did a NAMT thing. That's when they picked up the Junkyard Dog producers,
okay,
who are the nicest, greatest, I can't say enough about them, producers on Broadway. And at that point, Chris Ashley, Kelly Devine, Ian Eisendrath were then brought in. They did a workshop in Seattle.
Okay.
And Rodney Hicks and Kendra Kassenbaum were in that workshop. And then the first production of it, professional production of it, was at the La Jolla Playhouse that ran in June and July of 2015.
So it was like La Jolla, Seattle, Washington, D.C.,
yep,
maybe someplace else, and then Broadway.
Newfoundland. We did a concert in Newfoundland,
oh,
a two-day
God,
concert.
That and footage is just breathtaking.
Isn't it something?
Yes.
It was really, it was our favorite thing we did, was go to Gander. It was incredible. Anyway, I could talk about that for 2 hours. But
okay,
we ran in Toronto also for a few months, a good chunk of time.
So for the five people on the globe who don't know the thumbnail sketch description of Come From Away, you know, I've sort of buried the lead, as we say, and we jumped right into the thing. It is a story about...
It is a story about how on 9/11, the American airspace was closed after the attack at the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. And we all remember that time when the flights all stopped. But the problem is there were many, many, many flights in the air. If you were in America, they could just ground them at the nearest airport. The international flights had to be grounded outside of the American airspace. For 38 jumbo jets, that meant landing in a tiny town called Gander, Newfoundland, where they have an enormous airport where people used to land and refuel. It's the northeast tip of North America. They would land there, refuel, and then go on to Europe. So they have this enormous airport that they've been talking about closing for years and years and years that suddenly hosted 38 jumbo jets. So what the story is how this town of about 8,000 people hosted 7,000 people for 5 days.
And two of the people who are on a plane when this happens, flying from where to where? Diane and Nick, your character and her beloved, as it turns
right
out, started where and were going where?
Well, in the show, it's because sometimes
they're composites,
things are positive,
right? Like there's
right
lots of people.
Yeah. Yeah. But in reality, they just had to kind of put us all on one plane
sure,
so we could all sing one song.
Yes.
But in reality, Nick and Diane were flying from London to Houston. And so that was, and Nick was an oil executive based in London and had business in Houston. And Diane was, she was a buyer, I think, Alana, like for Neiman Marcus, something, one of the big department stores. She was a buyer and she had been over visiting her son in England who was in the service, I think. And so she was flying back and they met and fell in love and made out on the plane the whole way back to Texas, and they're married and he moved to Texas. I mean, they're real people.
It's so yeah crazy. It's so
crazy.
Kismet in the middle of this chaos is so
yeah
incredible. And anyone who is aware of the sort of legacy and aura around your show knows that you, so many of you have not just, even though there are composites, there are sort of touchstones of real people that you've been able to meet and befriend and are part of the Come From Away family. I remember when Jen Colella was on the show pre-pandemic, when she came on the podcast, just talking about all of the people who come to the stage door and what it is to kind of both absorb and mm-hmm and find a way to do the show, celebrate the people you are celebrating by doing the show, honor the memory of those we've lost, and what it is to sort of have thousands and thousands and thousands of people want to share every day their own experiences with you, and to balance that, like to balance how to protect yourself and
right.
be there and just have your own energy saved to do the show for them, that it's a lot. And you have been doing it, I think, from the beginning, other than right. vacations, you have not left the show. Mm-mm. And then there was a really crazy long
right.
pause unexpectedly. Yeah. When the pandemic hit, and I know we were all in shows, and on March 12th, Cuomo made the announcement that Broadway was closing, and none of us really understood. Of course right. we didn't. No one did. What
yeah.
was ahead, what we're still living with, even to this day. How in touch with you, you talk about, is it Junkyard Dog Productions?
Yeah, Junkyard Dogs Productions. Yeah.
And all of the people in the company, how often were they in touch with you as none of us knew what the future held? But obviously your show is a huge hit.
Right.
So there's hope that it would come back if things came back. What are they saying to you? Because this is sort of the catalyst for a very long road trip that you take to get yeah. your kid from, you know, New York to LA, I think was the adventure.
San Diego,
yeah. sorry.
Yeah.
Tell me what you knew and what did they tell you?
You know, it's interesting because I think I was sort of surprised, and this is through no fault of anyone's, but I was surprised that 100% of the time I got the biggest news from the news.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I found out Broadway was being shut down the exact same way everybody else did. I saw it yeah. on TV, and I would hear that Broadway was extending the, you know, the pause, the shutdown from the news. And it's not that we weren't in contact with Sue and Randy and Kenny and Marlene, who were the four Junkyard Dog people. We were. We had weekly Zooms on Sunday afternoons. Joel Hatch hosted a cocktail hour every Sunday. And the dogs, we call them the dogs would come on and we would talk, they would talk about what they knew. But mostly we were just talking about what food we had made. I mean, really just like everybody else, right?
How's everybody doing?
Yeah, it was more that, and just, they wanted us to keep the faith. The big thing that they kept saying that really helped was the show is in financial good shape. We will come back. We are not going to be one of these shows that has to close. And mm-hmm. our hearts were with everybody whose show closed. What an awful, horrible way to close a show. Closing a show is already terrible, but to close it in the middle of a pandemic and never have a last show is so heartbreaking. And they kept saying, unless Broadway in its entirety never comes back, we will be there. And they said, we will not come back until Kenny said this, we will not come back until we are allowed to come back with hugs and tears and love, and we're all ready to be in the same room again. And I think what they meant by that was we weren't going to come back wearing masks on stage or doing something behind a plastic partition. So we kind of knew that their business model was they were going to wait it out. And so knowing that, I knew any time, you know, I knew it was going to be a while. I didn't want to know that in my head, but in my heart, I thought this is going to be a long time.
You know, you talk about your character of Diane and it all connects to your book in a way, Drive, because Diane in the story of this play is at a crossroads in her life.
Yeah.
And her takeaway is sort of new beginnings. I mean, I think globally that was sort of, you know, we're sort of in that moment right now again,
yeah,
sort of
right.
You can't deny what's happened, but how do you get up each day and go forward
right.
in the face of what's happened? And what's really amazing, and I don't know if people know this, is sort of the alignment of Sharon and Diane, because you, in recent history, I don't know, the right. day you got married, ended up ending a marriage
right.
with which you have, you know, a beautiful family that you made out of that
right.
marriage.
That's
and
right.
marrying a woman
right.
who is the stage manager of the original production of Come From Away in San Diego, the show that you were like, I don't even know how to audition anymore.
Yeah.
By the way, yeah. You were also auditioning for your entire relationship future, as it turns out.
Right.
Were you married to a man or a woman the first time around?
I was married to a man.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there are so many huge yeses that you allowed to come out of your mouth experientially, literally. And I am sure there were many conversations that you had to have with so many people in your life.
Oh my God. I mean,
about this new, and his name is Martha, right?
Like, right. Yeah.
Like I mean, the assumption.
Yeah. I mean, that, or that people would say, this was my favorite.
Yeah.
Because I was sort of telling people that I was getting divorced and telling people that I was with a woman at the same time. Right. And for many people, the more traumatic piece of it was the fact that I was getting divorced, because I had one of those marriages that people really looked up to, and me too, you know, I mean, it was all of it was hard. It was all very difficult to process. And, you know, you try to move through those things as much as you can with as much love as you can, but there's no way to not leave, you know, injuries in the wake. And so every bit of it was hard, and every bit of it, I have regrets and sorrow, and I'm also proud of, and I'm, you know, I mean, there's a million things. So, but to also take your entire community of people, right? Your family, your friends, your everybody. And just kind of like, I felt like I just like put them all on my back and said, you guys, I know this is hard, but you have to just trust me on this one. We're going to find our way out of it, and it's going to be okay. And to really like come out to people at the same time that people are processing that this big, giant, happy marriage is also coming to an end. And how do you deal with that and not vilify anybody? All of it. It was all very complicated. And all I knew was at the other end was Martha. And for reasons that I couldn't even understand, I knew it was right. That's it. And Martha even said to me, how do you have such a solid understanding of what this relationship is going to be? Because it was built on teeny tiny little bones. I mean, we were not like a big relationship that was happening during Come From Away in La Jolla, anything like that. I mean, we didn't like each other. She would joke around like, oh, go tell the local hire to put on her show shoes. And she would come to me, you know, and then her ASM would come to me and I'd be like, listen, the choreographer told me I'm not wearing those shoes in the show because I have to climb on chairs. They're getting me different shoes. So I'm not going to wear these right now because they're not actually safe. And I was like, she's a big, scary lesbian stage manager. I mean, we really, we laugh about it. I don't know how we got here except love. That's it. And I had very sick parents and she had very sick parents and we kind of bonded on that together. And I just sometimes would look at her. I was like, you're a woman. I don't even know what to say to you. But it just, I don't know. She's an incredible human being and very happily single. I really ruined her life.
Yeah. I've read that. That's been quoted. Well, apparently it turns out you find really scary lesbian stage managers sexy.
I guess I do.
Yeah. That's your thing.
Not me. Well, that's the thing. When I was telling people, there were people who would say to me, oh, I always knew it. I always knew you were gay. And I would just laugh and I'd be like, that's hilarious because I sure didn't know it. And
that's interesting.
Yeah. And even Martha was like, you're straight. And I was like, I am. But yeah. I, you know, my kids joke around and they say that I'm gay for Martha and I don't really have to worry about it beyond that. I have no shame about, I mean, I don't move through the world in a homophobic way about myself or my relationship or, you know, I'm proudly out there. And if I can normalize this, that would be really, you know, I don't know. I sort of live my whole life with like, what is my goal in this? And I would say if I have a goal in it, it's just to take the stigma away.
The book Drive is about you and Martha deciding that you are going to drive cross country in an RV. That's really
even
the premise
when you say
of the
it,
book.
I'm like, Oh my God, is that really, we really did that. Yes, that is, that's what happened. 91 days.
We'll think of like an Albert Brooks film. Like there are different versions of this that we will see when the book is adapted for a film, because it must, I mean, it's so primed to be a visual story for people.
It's not like either of us went into this with any sort of knowledge or gravitas that we were going to be able to do what we did.
Yeah.
It really was, the early days of the pandemic, people didn't want to fly and nobody wanted to even get a hotel room, which I think at this point in the pandemic, people look back on that a little bit and have sort of rose colored glasses like, oh, please, it was safe. You could stay in a hotel room, but people weren't. They would rent, you know, a hotel room for two nights and let it air out overnight before they went in. And it still meant driving across country, because we had a car, we could have just driven it, but it still meant going into public restrooms, going into restaurants, going into hotels. It still didn't feel safe.
By the way, it was a great idea. And
Thank you.
You survived it.
We
like
did.
It could have, I mean, you're still married. I feel like forget what you went through in your first, like, I mean, traveling is stressful under the best 5-star circumstances. Not knowing where you are can be stressful. You talk about in the book, like it's really dark out.
It's
when you get
really
to these
dark
places at night, right? Like, how are you going to hook up to this thing with like your little, you know, iPhone flashlight, like really emptying waste, like all the things that you guys had to do that we think of, like when we're shooting something and someone shows up and your camper is really clean when you show up to set and then you make a mess and the next day it's clean again. Like, that
it's
was you.
Definitely not like that. And, you know, your set moves, so you can't leave anything out on the counter, or the second you pull out, everything goes flying and crashing and it's like dangerous and loud.
So would you do it again?
Yeah, I would, which is really, and the reason I know that is because we collected all of the stuff in a very come from away fashion. I put a thing out on social media and I said, and we were in an Airbnb in Cincinnati. And I said, hey, we're renting an RV, ha ha ha. And it came completely empty. Like there was absolutely not one thing in it, except for, you know, there was a mattress and the toilet and the whatever,
right.
Nothing else. And we weren't home to stock it ourselves. We were in an Airbnb. It wasn't like we could take their coffee pot. And we didn't have jobs, and it was already ridiculous that we were getting an RV, although I'd gotten a good deal, but I kept joking and saying, you know, I have a 0% credit card and a dream. And that's what we did.
God damn it.
There you go.
We're doing it.
Like, here we go. And I mean, me on the phone with Sue Frost, I was really like, do you really think the show is going to come back? Are you sure? I have a 0% credit card. And, so people started, I put a thing on social media and I said, you know, if anybody has literally blankets and bedding, you know, things for the kitchen that maybe you're not using, non-breakables better, you know, if you have an outdoor grill, and people started just leaving stuff on our front porch because nobody could come in and they would just label it. And it was like people I'd gone to high school with, but also just people who I didn't know, who they had reposted it there on their social media.
And suddenly you're set up.
We were set up. I really felt like I was in Cup of Way. I was like, wow.
I want to ask about like your writing process, because, you know, you actually are one of the few people I know who enjoy writing. Most of my friends who write love like finally when it's done, but they find the actual process of writing the thing, like, please let me do anything but write today. They have to be, you know, chained to their desk. Were you sort of journaling or like throughout the whole trip? Do you talk into your phone? Do you voice memo? Sort of what is your process?
I think I journaled the first 4 days and then it was too busy. It's so much work. I have a good memory. And that sounds crazy, but I have a really good memory. And the one thing that I did do was not that I used any of it, but I would collect, I have a lot of paperwork from the trip. Like I have every map of every RV park that we went to. I am an avid picture taker. And I would also, there would be moments that I would think, if I actually write this book, like I had a good idea that this could be a book, which also—
Before you even went on the journey, was that part of why you wanted to do it?
Yeah.
Okay. You're like, let's do this and I'll write about it.
I called my agent because she and I had never really been able to find like the exact project that we wanted to work on. And I said, I have to get Toby to San Diego. I might rent an RV and I really don't want to, because I like bougie, like Four Seasons.
Sure. You want to be comfortable.
And, yeah. And I said, and Martha's really into it and she's already bought 4 headlamps. Is this funny? And she was like, this is funny. And she said, why don't you write a treatment? So truthfully, I wrote a whole, you know, treatment of the book. I outlined it with chapters and what it would be and whatever. And she went about the process of trying to sell it. And here it is, you know, it's like April 15th of 2020. And every publishing company said nobody wanted to hear about the pandemic.
Right.
And there were all of these printing presses that had been halted. So people's books that were— there were books already in the pipeline that weren't getting published. So no one was interested in talking to anybody, especially like some weirdo Broadway actress who had published a memoir, you know, 15 years earlier about doing this. And so I didn't have a publisher when we left on the trip. So it felt a little bit like a pipe dream, but also I know me, I'm tenacious and I like to close the loop. And I just thought, I know I'm going to do something with this. I don't know what it's going to be. So I would take videos and I'd do like vlog videos and just send it to my best friend. So I had a lot of footage, but I also just have a good memory for that.
Which is incredible. And what do you hope? I mean, it's funny and it's moving. I mean, you're dealing with real life loss in the book. You know, you touched earlier how you and Martha both had parents who were ill, and that was sort of a bonding, you know, where, and it wasn't just because your parents were older, it was because your mom was sick. I mean, it was a lot of really hard things to deal with while you always have this incredible way of making us laugh at the same time, which is just such an incredible skill. What do you hope? What was your like fantasy? Someone will read Drive and what? Like if you could finish that sentence.
I think that it's good to remember that you can change the narrative, or at least that you can control it. And I could not bear the idea that there was going to be a pandemic and the show was going to shut down, and that the narrative of that time was, and she waited. I just thought, I have waited for so much in my life. You know, as an actor, you wait all the time. As a writer, you're waiting all the time. And I finally had landed this job that I love, not just because I have a job, but because I actually love the show. I actually love the people that I work with. And I was missing it so much. And I think that's something that people can relate to. What do you do when you're faced with a situation that you can't control? How do you find any control in it? And my friend John Westcott had this great saying he used to say to me all the time when I was sad or depressed or mad or whatever. And he would say, move a muscle, change a thought. And I think that's my biggest takeaway from the experience that I had and from the book that I wrote, is I just want to remind people that even in the moments when you feel like you have no choices and that there no good can come out of a situation, to keep looking, because there is something. You do have control over your reaction to it, and you have control over your personal self and what you do. And for parents out there, that what you do is being seen by your children. And I felt it was imperative to give my kids an experience. I wanted them to have an adventure that we could look back on and cherish and laugh about how bad we were at it, or this moment or that moment. And it certainly was not always awesome. But it was always funny and it happened.
So I've thought a lot about this for myself. I remember early on in March of 2020, I was still doing the lines of the show that I was in for a while because we didn't know. I was like, okay. And as time went on, I was like, okay, I still know my opening. I enter and I say this, and then I grab the thing and I walk over to the table and Margaret called, like I'm doing it. And then at a certain point, I was like, okay, I got to let this go. I don't need to run these lines anymore or review my blocking, because whatever happens, this is no longer attached to what that experience is going to be. Like we will be starting anew to a certain degree if it happens. Right. So at some point you stop doing your come from away, you know, vocal warm up each night in the shower, right? Like you got to let it go and just live whatever the life is. When it was time to come back, when you finally, you know, 2 years in, for those of us who are passionate about Broadway or live in the Broadway space, you're hearing each day, like what's coming back and what date it's coming back. So at some point you get a call, it's coming back. Right. And first of all, Jen Todd, who's a dear friend of mine, produced with Tommy Kail, your film version of the show. Yeah. So she was in town and she came on the podcast when you guys were filming it. So I knew, and then everybody knew that you guys were going to film it. And that happened first.
Right. Yeah.
So like, how long ago did you know that that was going to happen before it happened?
Well, I have to say my favorite chapter in the book is one of the last chapters, and it's called A Miracle on 34th Street. And it really talks exactly about the moment that I found out. But it was January 27th, I believe, 2021. And I found out there had been very light rumors. And I mean light rumors that felt like a fantasy. Like, we're going to film it. And I was in the underwear section of Macy's at Herald Square, and I got an email that said confirming the rumors. And I just thought, and it was from Sue Frost, Junkyard Dogs. And I just thought, I didn't even want to open it. I couldn't even allow myself the hope. And I opened it and it was like, we're filming it. And it just, I don't know. Well, it gave me this reaction. I sat down, I just cried. It was so unbelievable that we were going to do it. I could not believe the gift of it. I just couldn't, I kind of couldn't handle how fortunate I felt. And in the moment to just think like, oh my God, I wish my mother was alive that I could call, right? But at the same time, I thought, I've eaten a lot of bread.
All right, look, it's not Moulin Rouge. You're okay.
I know, but I just thought, I you know what I mean? I was like, oh my God.
Oh yeah.
And
oh,
so,
yeah.
You know,
it's happening. I know. Careful
that's
what
right.
we it, wish
because
for.
It's a dual thought, right? There's like, on the one hand, you're like, I love the story of this. And then there's the reality of, do I remember it? How much rehearsal are we going to have? And so, you know, you wear both of those hats at the same time.
Yeah.
And so, and also I didn't know who else had received offers to do the movie. And so that was tricky too, because I thought, I don't know who to tell. So I think everybody was sort of tender stepping. Is this going to be original Broadway cast? Is this, who's this going to be?
Right.
Exactly?
Is it a compilation tape of,
So that was sort of fun too, over the next couple of days, sort of the rollout of who had been asked to do the film. And then that was, I think we started right around this time. It was like early April. And then we shot the first week of May, and we were in a complete bubble. Like, you know, we couldn't leave the hotel. We had food delivered to our rooms.
Yeah.
We were allowed out. We did all rehearsals in masks, totally masked up, testing every day. And then for shooting, we did full run-throughs in masks right up to shooting. So,
but then they brought in a live audience.
Then they brought
at some point, and I know that they shot with and without an audience, but I cannot even imagine what that must have felt like after all that time to actually do it, even for a moment with a live audience. Yeah. And then now, and people can see it on YouTube, there's an opening night speech when you guys come back, excuse me, on Broadway in earnest, and yeah, sort of what that is, and some of the real gander. What are they? Gandarian? What do you call it if you're from Gander?
I guess, I mean, Newfoundlanders or Ganderites, we call them Ganderites.
Sometimes. Yeah. Yeah. Welcome to the Rock, right? Like it's just so moving. How lucky are we that Come From Away isn't just on Broadway. It's all over the world, this unique gift of a show. And for people lucky enough to have cable or whatever streaming service. And if not, there's someone with an Apple TV password that will be kind enough to lend it to you. Sorry, that's Apple TV. Even if you don't have your own account, anyone who knows anyone in college, they all have passwords that they're sharing.
That's right.
Sharon, before I let you go, is there a little known fact about you that you can share?
Oh, gosh, I didn't think about that. Is there a little known fact about me that I could share? Yes, I this is so silly, but one of the ways that I get through Two Show Wednesdays, which is sort of notoriously, for whatever reason, they're in the middle of the week and the audiences are sometimes a little quieter or whatever, and it's a long day and our shows are very close together. The stage right prop guy, Steve McDonald, and I have this ongoing thing between us because I love the television show Survivor. I love it. I love it with passion. I love the social. I don't care so much about like all of the, you know, eating bugs or the races and that stuff, but I love watching this community of people trying to navigate each other, the social experiment of it. I really love it. So Steve always, we have one little quick pass off where he hands me some beer bottles and he's like, do you have your DVR set? And I said, I do. And so that's my Wednesday passion is to watch Survivor with Steve.
Steve.
That's right. Steve McDonald.
Okay. I love it. I haven't heard like the acronym DVR in so long.
I love it that you feel it tells you exactly who he is. That's right. It's everything about it's perfect.
I love it. Everybody buy the book, find a way to see Come From Away. Sharon, I know there will be so many more things that come out of your brain and other performances we'll get to see in the future. But for now, I just feel so fortunate that you are in Come From Away on Broadway with this unbelievably beautiful cast. And I know you do book signings when you can all over the place. Just repeat the website. If people want to know like how to find all the magical things you do, how do they find you?
It's my name. So it's SharonWheatley.com. And if you go there, there's all sorts of information. If you're in New York, there are signed copies of my book at the Drama Bookshop, just if you want to shop local and you're in town. And we've been so fortunate, it keeps selling out there. And then I just run down between shows and I sign more. And it makes my heart happy to know that that money is going there. And then other than that, it's, you know, it's everywhere books are sold. And
I love that you're everywhere books are sold. I love it.
Somebody told me that's what I'm supposed to say.
It's everywhere books are sold.
I mean, it sounds so obnoxious. And the truth of the matter is if you walked into your local Barnes and Noble, would they carry this book? Probably not. You'd probably have to order it.
Wait a minute. I'm not finished after this episode. Yeah, well, all right. I'm going to let you go because it's not a Two Show day, but it is a show day.
It is.
Thank you for your time and all of the beautiful art you put into the world. And I can't wait to see you in person really soon.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
A-okay. One more thing. So many of you have asked, how do you donate to the podcast? Well, it could not be easier. Just go to littleknownfactspodcast.com/donations. Instructions are clearly laid out. And I'm so grateful to you in advance for any donation you choose to make. But regardless, I have loved, loved, loved making the previous 200 and something episodes for you. I can't wait to make 200 more. I wish you a beautiful day. Stay healthy. Be safe. Until next time. Clouds can make the wind blow. This episode of Little Known Facts was edited by Nicholas Klar. We record in New York City.
The Little Known Facts theme song was written and recorded and sung by Georgia Famusa with backup vocals by Caleb Famusa. Thank you.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.